Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good Monday morning to you. I hope that you had a great weekend. I hope it was everything that you needed, a little bit of what you wanted, but that you were able to get away from work for a little bit. Maybe enjoy some football, some baseball. There was a lot happening. It's October. I don't need to tell you there's a lot happening. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. It is a Monday MVP poll in which there is a baseball player. Remember, it was a week ago that we had Carlos Correa in our Monday MVP poll because he had the walk-off home run in the 11th inning of Game 2 of the ALCS. Sometimes the details get blurry. That was a week ago, for heaven's sakes. I can't be expected to remember everything. Anyway, we have inserted yet another Houston Astro hitter into our Monday MVP poll. I don't think I need to tell you who it is, but you're going to have to check it out. Oh, A-Law Radio on Twitter or on our Facebook page. You're weighing in. And then we will take your phone calls as we head through this hour. 855-212-4227. 855-212-4CBS. It gets you inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams. And for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Now, the Monday MVP thing is something that we do every week, of course. But this is a question that I've thrown out there unique to week 7. As I was watching games on Sunday and thinking about the number of teams that are either surprises or who've overcome major adversity, including injuries to their starting quarterbacks or starting quarterbacks retiring abruptly to start the season, I'm really impressed by the group of coaches right now that's showing the way. And by showing the way, I mean the teams that have started out hot. We don't know if they will stay hot. We don't know if they will end up winning divisions. None of that is in my crystal ball. I don't have any of that information. Like Sean Payton, I do not prognosticate. He won't even prognosticate whether or not his quarterback could be ready for week number 8. We'll get to that. But it really struck me as I watched games on Sunday and took notes. The number of coaches who've had to step up, strong leadership, set the tone, keep the ship moving. Just keep rowing. I know the phrase is just keep swimming, but I changed it. Sure, Bill Belichick should be a Coach of the Year candidate. Sure, Kyle Shanahan should be a Coach of the Year candidate. Those two teams are a perfect 6-0 with the Patriots playing on Monday Night Football. But how about a team like the Indianapolis Colts that's first place in the AFC South despite having injuries to really key pieces like Darius Leonard, but also Andrew Luck? People were booing Andrew Luck in Indianapolis because he retired and left the team high and dry. And yet Jacoby Brissett is prepared. And that's a direct reflection on the head coach, Frank Reich. And I was already impressed with his leadership a year ago. Or how about Sean Payton? I mean, he's one of the grizzled veterans, along with Belichick, the longest tenured head coaches in the league. And his Saints have not lost since Drew Brees got hurt, which blows me away. It's not all about him. They've got all hands on deck. Taysom Hill, he'll do anything the Saints ask him to do. I tweeted that on Sunday and some guy wrote back, sell concessions, sell t-shirts. I mean, Taysom Hill will do anything they ask him to do. Bridgewater isn't doing it all by himself, though they did win without Alvin Kamara on Sunday. But we're talking about a team in which we've seen special teams come up with huge plays and contribute. We've seen the defense do the same thing. Even with Drew Brees, this team is still not all about the quarterback. The Saints have changed that. Now, do you take points away because they went to the NFC Championship a year ago, single-handedly spearheaded a rule change in the NFL that makes no sense? Maybe you dock Sean Payton because the team was supposed to be good. But without Drew Brees? Come on. That'd be like saying if the Patriots lost Tom Brady and didn't lose, that Bill Belichick shouldn't get any of the credit. I disagree with that royally. Maybe it's Matt LaFleur. Mike Zimmer, anyone? They've certainly done an about-face with their offense, the Vikings. John Harbaugh? We're going to see what Andy Reid can do with his Kansas City Chiefs. How about Sean McDermott? Some good candidates in here. So that's what I'm asking you. Who is your early front runner for NFL Coach of the Year? Yes, it's early. You don't need to tell me it's early. I know it's early. But who are some of your dark horse candidates? We'll take your calls again. You can find us on social media. I don't know that anybody's casting a vote in the direction of Jason Garrett, at least not yet. But again, it's early. However, the Cowboys finally played a first half that they can be proud of against the Philadelphia Eagles at AT&T Stadium. Remember, the last 3 weeks, they'd come out and laid a rotten egg in the first half and then had to try to climb out of a hole. Big reason why they dropped 3 games in a row. Not so much on Sunday Night Football.
Witten and Cooper to the left of the line. Motion behind the line by Tavon Austin. They'll pitch it to Austin on the right side. Austin a little high step at the 20. Cuts back at the 10. Weaves to the 5. Diving for the pylon. And that's a touchdown. Tavon Austin zigging and zagging his way. 20 yards for the score. And it's 6-0 Dallas. Prescott under center. Marks out the signals, turns, gives it to Ezekiel Elliott, lunging over the left side, dives into the end zone for the touchdown. There's his 6th rushing touchdown of the year. 13-0 Dallas with 8:56 remaining in the first. Witten will go in motion from right to left. Prescott turns on first and goal, play action, rolls right, floats it into the end zone all alone. Blake Jarwin with the touchdown. And it's 20-7 Dallas as Jarwin, the loneliest man in the end zone, makes the catch from 1 yard out. Prescott play action, rolling right, pumping. He's going to run. Dak Prescott to the 5, dives in for the touchdown. And Dak Prescott may have just put this one away. 36-10 as Prescott takes it in from the 8 for 6.
The Cowboys worked hard to establish the run early on in this game. They wanted to be sure that they had established Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard. Man, he had a couple of dynamic cuts and plays. So nearly 200 yards rushing as a team. But, and this is partly because of the injuries to the Philadelphia Eagles defense, there was very little pass rush. And Dak had lots of time behind that offensive line. And they came out like a house on fire, scoring on 5 of their 6 drives before the break. The Eagles shot themselves in the foot. I don't know what that feels like, but I can imagine it's extremely painful. On their first 2 drives in hostile territory against a divisional opponent, Dallas Goedert and Carson Wentz both fumble, and those fumbles lead directly to Dallas touchdowns. Kevin Kugler with the calls on the Westwood One radio network. It's kind of nice when your kicker isn't the highlight of the first half. So a week ago, Brett Maher hit what was a 62-yard field goal. He hit a 63-yard field goal, a career long for him, just before the break. And I wanted to make sure I pointed out, because kickers are people too, that he is the first in NFL history to have at least 3 made field goals of 60 yards or more in his career. I know that we're going to talk about the Cowboys offense coming up with Mike Fisher when he joins us from Dallas. We'll call that inside of 10 minutes from now. But I thought it was funny when I saw him tweet during the game about how all of the positive creative plays for the Cowboys must have been called by Kellen Moore. All the bad plays, the ones that didn't work, those were definitely dialed up by Jason Garrett.
thought our offensive line did an excellent job allowing us to be balanced, protected well. We ran the ball, really throughout the game. Kellen did a really good job staying persistent with that. And we tried to attack different ways. We tried to get the ball out of our hand, tried to move our quarterback. We tried to take shots down the field when we had opportunities. Dak made a number of big-time throws. Receivers did a great job on the other end.
It's kind of that back against the wall mentality. As Clarence said, it's you don't necessarily want to be in that position, but I've told y'all all year long and continue to say we've got the right men in that locker room that when we're in this position that double down on themselves, believe in the man next to them, and go out there and just perform like you need to perform when they need to. So, as I said, we're going to grow from it. We're going to figure out how to do that.
It was a game in which the Cowboys could kind of reset, feel better about the way things had gone. They're back in sole possession of first place in the NFC East, though. It is the NFC East, and it's a little bit like a soap opera. It's always my favorite NFL soap opera, that division. The Dallas defense gets some credit as well. 4 turnovers, 3 sacks of Carson Wentz. And would you believe it? Doug Peterson's team has started 3-4 for the second year in a row.
What has to change is we got to roll our sleeves up and go to work. We got to figure out what's going on. We got 9 games left. It's going to start with me. I'm going to own this one, for the football team. I'm going to look hard the next couple of days, but we got the guys in the locker room to get it fixed. I know that. And I still have a lot of faith in them and a lot of trust, and we'll get it fixed.
They did it last year. They went to the NFC divisional round thanks to the double doink. Oh, my gosh. Cody Parkey had another doink on the upright on Sunday. He's not with the Bears anymore, as you know, but with the Titans. Oh, Twitter went nutso. So we're going to get the scoop on the Cowboys offense. Will the real Dallas Cowboys please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up. Mike Fisher, Cowboys insider from CowboysSI.com and our Dallas affiliate, 105.3 The Fan, will join us live up early and is going to spend a few minutes with us here straight ahead. In the meantime, who is your early front runner for NFL Coach of the Year? And what about a couple of dark horse candidates on Twitter, on Facebook? We're going to get back to your phone calls. Good Monday morning to you. I hope you had a great weekend. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
And they're going to go boot to the right. He's got nobody. He's going to keep it to the 5. He's got a first down, dive into the pylon. Touchdown! Touchdown for Dak Prescott, as Babe called. And with that touchdown, Dak Prescott has surpassed Hall of Famer Roger Staubach for most rushing touchdowns in a career by a Cowboys quarterback. That's the 21st rushing touchdown of Dak Prescott's career.
Thought he played an outstanding game. Really was in control of everything. Made great decisions throughout. Made a number of big plays. Plays with his feet. Plays with his arm. Played really well in critical situations. Cashing in the red zone on some drives for us. And just really did a nice job. Really in command of everything. And played really well in situational football.
Hits, misses, and messes. Time to talk football after hours with Amy Lawrence.
The one and only Brad Sham on the Cowboys Radio Network and the voice of Jason Garrett, who gets none of the credit when the Cowboys win, but gets all of the blame when the Cowboys lose. However, it's a positive, happy Monday morning for Cowboys fans because their offense busted out against the Eagles. First half, something to be proud of. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. We are proud to welcome Mike Fisher, Cowboys insider, part of our affiliate in Dallas, 105.3 The Fan. Mike, I don't know what to expect from week to week when the Cowboys offense gets out there, but what is their real identity? Who are the real Cowboys?
Well, I think the first thing, and you pinpointed it to some degree, I think, about the blame and the credit. Jason Garrett's stamp is on this team in a good way. I don't know how good they are. You're right. I mean, they're one game over 500. They just got done losing 3 in a row, including a loss to the Jets. That was just almost impossible and impossible for them to fathom. But they don't quit on their coach. They do continue to give effort. They do respond when the back's against their wall. So I'm not much of an identity guy. I think it's kind of a cliche sometimes because, you know, my identity is, well, I want to run and I want to throw and I want to tackle and I want to block and I want to catch. But the Jason Garrett cowboy identity is on those T-shirts that he hands out to everybody that say fight, fight, fight. He means it and so do they.
I had to laugh like out loud in my living room when I saw your tweet during the game last night, something along the lines of, oh, when it's a creative play and it works, it must be Kellen Moore calling it. When it's one that doesn't work, it has to be Jason Garrett. But it feels like that's what's happening. Like it's this weird narrative where all the negative things get piled on Garrett. And yet Kellen Moore, when the offense does well, is like the next savior of the franchise.
Well, and maybe there's some people that still don't grasp the sarcasm there. That they really do believe that the Cowboys started 3-0 because of and scored 30 points a game because of Kellen, and then Jason Garrett marched into the meeting room and urged them to start scoring 10. And if you think about it logically, it's just ridiculous. And we have tried to break down here in Dallas because we're at the Star. You know, we live at the Star. So I do try to explain to people who care to listen, no, this is actually how an offensive coaching staff works. Each guy has his area of study, and then they get together on Tuesday, and, you know, the tight ends coach is in charge of third down stuff, and the wide receiver coach is in charge of, you know, whatever, and red zone stuff or whatever. Then they get together, and Kellen Moore puts together an offensive game plan supervised by Jason Garrett, mm-hmm. But people still don't want to believe it because the anti-Garrett movement is really strong. And by the way, I get that too. It's been 10 years, and it hasn't been good enough, especially because in Cowboys Nation, many view it as their birthright to win Super Bowls, which isn't the way it works either, but that's the way the thinking works here.
Cowboys insider Mike Fisher with us here live on After Hours, CBS Sports Radio. I know that Jerry Jones has to answer this question every week. And so I'm asking you, because you're around the team all the time, how much do you believe him when he says that Jason Garrett's job is safe? Kind of. Now, he said that, and then he's kind of hedged his bets. But I don't really know what the truth is. So what I'm asking you again to help me sort out and find the truth, Mike.
The hot seat is real. You're the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. It's the big stage. You know, that's what Urban Meyer was talking about in his interview the other day about the desire to coach in Dallas, his and other people's. This is, to football people, this is the big stage.
Right.
So that makes the seat automatically hot. You go back to training camp in Oxnard the very first day, the press conference for Jerry Jones, and he's asked about Jason Garrett entering the year without a contract. And Jerry, because there were construction noises going on around the training camp that day and that week, Jerry cups his hand around his ear theatrically and says, hey, I can't hear the question. we all know the question, and I think we all know the answer. It's a fairly open secret. If the Cowboys don't experience premium-level success this year under Jason Garrett, he won't be the head coach again next year. And because I'm the one, I'm right there with Jerry right after the game, representing 105.3 The Fan. So I'm often answering that first couple of questions. And yeah, it is a nice break for me to not have to this time ask him about the job security of his coach.
Is that your assignment every week you have to ask that particular question?
Yeah, and other various stupid questions, yes.
I mean, aren't you blessed? That's sounds like a fun job. So let's talk ahead.
You know what, and truthfully, you know, Jerry's accessibility is unparalleled,
it
as
is.
I know you know.
Right.
And Jason Garrett entered this, you know, he knows what he's getting into, too. He's had a lot of job security and made a lot of money here, and without a contract, coaching without a contract this year, it's unspoken what that means. We all know it.
It seems to me, and this is not about the contract or about his value to the Cowboys financially, but it seems to me that when Amari Cooper is not on the field or not healthy, so he missed a good portion of last week's game, this offense looks completely different. Going back to when the Raiders traded him to the Cowboys, what changes, what differences have you seen in the offense with Cooper on the field?
Well, the first thing that jumps out to me is I remember we all questioned and wondered, because this was the buzz in Oakland, you know, does he love football?
Mm.
And, boy, has that disappeared. Amari Cooper, the number one thing, and we all talk about his route running, and obviously he's a Pro Bowl caliber guy, putting up Pro Bowl numbers every single week. Last week, going into the Jets game, Amy, the bruise on his thigh was a foot high and wrapped halfway around his leg. And on Thursday at the Star, the bruise had extended itself and encompassed itself all the way around his leg.
Oh, my gosh.
And yet he's standing there saying, I'm going to try to practice Friday and I'm going to try to play Sunday. And I thought, and I said this to a lot of guys in the locker room afterwards, I thought the theme of the game was, and the theme of the week was, there's no way that Cobb, Cooper, Tyron Smith, Lyle Collins, and to a lesser extent, Byron Jones. Because Byron Jones, the cornerback, actually looked good over the course of the week. Mm-hmm. But those other four guys did not look good over the course of the week. Those other four guys were not running around on the field, were not practicing fully. The training staff, Jim Maurer and Britt Brown here, and some sort of a hard work magic wand allows those guys to play. And I really think if I'm playing next to that guy, I'm inspired by his sheer presence here, because he's trying to play a pro football game now against the Philadelphia Eagles. And 2 days ago, he couldn't even walk. That's the story.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing the difference that he makes. But as you say, he sets the tone as well. Mike Fisher with us from Dallas after hours on CBS Sports Radio. What did you hear about Leighton Vander Esch, who left in the first half after what was termed a neck injury?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. He's mad. He's livid.
Oh.
And I'm in the locker room with him. And I said, "What? Well, you seem a little upset." He says, "Yeah, I wanted to go back in. I could have gone back in. They wouldn't let me go back in. I'm fine." And, you know, "How's your neck?" "I'm fine." "I know, but I'm fine." So he had something wrong with his neck, but right next to it, he had a chip on his shoulder. He did not like the idea of sitting that game out. But in comes Joe Thomas,
right,
who the Cowboys think has some star quality at linebacker. And then, Amy, they played a lot of base defense with Sean Lee. And I know that they practiced that way during the week, but I thought it was because they were missing so many guys. They were like, "Well, we got extra linebackers. We might as well play base defense with three linebackers." But they didn't just practice that way. They played that way, and Sean Lee was terrific. And then Jordan Lewis, another guy that doesn't probably get enough snaps here and is unheralded, he was terrific as well.
Any word on Robert Quinn?
Jerry Jones likes to come out and do his Dr. Jerry thing. And he said, you know, no word yet. Now, he gets his information straight from the medical team and then shares it with us. But we will monitor that here this morning. We'll have more on it in Dallas on 105.3 The Fan in a little bit.
All right. Well, that's where you will be because it's a Cowboys Monday. You can follow him on Twitter at Fish Sports. And it's always great when we get to catch him live on the air for sure. But enjoy your crazy Cowboys Nation Monday, Mike. I appreciate a couple of minutes.
Thank you, my friend.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And that's driven deep to left center field. Gardner is going back. Looking out. See you later. See you later. See you later. Astros headed back to the World Series. Jose Altuve, a walk-off two-run homer, and the Astros beat the Yankees 6-4, win the ALCS 4-2.
He's turned himself into a star in his career here, and yet he's remained humble. He's remained hungry. He's driven. He's engaging with his teammates. You know, it's the same old quote of everything that's right about the Astros is Jose Altuve. He's been here the longest. And has seen a lot and seen this organization grow from the ground up. I'm so proud of him. I'm so fortunate to be his manager.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It's a little traditional. It's a little unconventional. But Jose Altuve for that walk-off home run that propels the Astros to the World Series Saturday night. It was after midnight New York time. It was roughly 11:30 Houston time. And I was in an apartment with a bunch of people who were sleeping and a dog who was snoring. So I was listening to it with headphones and could not yell, could not exclaim. So I had to use Twitter as my outlet. That's my life. Anyway, a pretty incredible moment for the Astros and for Jose Altuve, who won the ALCS MVP for hitting .348 in the series, scoring six runs. But let's be honest, it really was about that walk-off dinger. And so Houston eliminates the Yankees again. That's three of the last 5 years, and the Astros are moving forward to their third World Series in franchise history. That begins on Tuesday. I am really hopeful for some pitchers' duels. Considering the starting rotations for these two teams, I'm hoping we get some good old-fashioned pitchers' duels, which are kind of outdated in 2019. Altuve is one of our choices for Monday MVP, so you can find that poll on Twitter, A-Law Radio, or on our Facebook page. And so far, it's turning into a two-horse race. Would you like to know who the other horse is? Oh, well, it's this quarterback. Maybe you've heard of him. His name is Aaron Rodgers. He wears the green and the gold. And he actually did something on Sunday that he's never done before in his career.
Rodgers, quick toss, left side, got his man first down, extending down the left sideline and heading on his way. It is MBS. No one will catch him. Touchdown, Green Bay. Simple little swing pass turns into a 75-yard touchdown pass, and there is your dagger.
This was most complete that I've played. I felt good about the timing. You know, there are a lot of balls thrown on time, and obviously the line played fantastic.
The line definitely did. The Oakland Raiders also had some really critical mistakes that helped with this. We'll call it an onslaught, the Packers' onslaught. They were up 21-10 at half, and this was after just four possessions in the first half. So really, early on, it was about the ball control and who could possess that football longer. And still, the Pack made the most of their opportunities. And I thought it was really interesting, more of what we saw a week ago, because there's still no Davante Adams, because there have been injuries to the receiving core, and still not a lot of experience, though you hear that touchdown with Valdez-Scantling and Wayne Larrivee on the Packers radio network. Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur really leaning heavily on Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones, whether on the ground as running backs or whether through the air. I mean, we've seen them out in the flat. We've seen them go deep. And so right now he's going with the guys that he trusts the most. For the first time in Rodgers' career, he posts a perfect passer rating. And if you're not sure what that number is, 158.3. Such an odd number, but that's what it is, the mathematical formula. Nerd alert. 25 of 31. You can do the quick math, but I'll do it for you. It's early on a Monday morning. 6 incompletions. He also had 6 touchdowns. I mean, that's just showing off. You have as many touchdowns as you have incompletions. Over 400 yards. And as I say, the Raiders kind of hurt themselves a bit, having 2 turnovers. Derek Carr, 1 interception at the goal line. So it was 1 at the goal line, 1 in the end zone. 1 was a fumble, 1 was an interception. Oh, the fumble was at the goal line, actually. I remember the play now. Oh, my gosh. Diving, as he likes to do, and extending the football. But maybe he has really small hands because he can't palm it for very long. So, yeah, this was a game for the Packers in which they moved to 6-1. And I don't know that we could call anything a coming out party for Aaron Rodgers, but maybe a coming out party for this particular version of the Packers offense, because this was, as Rodgers says, as complete as it gets. If you have not seen the post-game celebration in the locker room, Matt LaFleur is handing out a game ball, and even as he puts Aaron Rodgers in the center of the circle, he manages to insult him, which is kind of fun. And so I think that while the Packers have kind of seen some of those, I wouldn't call them bumps and bruises, but some of the growing pains when you bring in a new head coach, certainly the way the defense is played, the way special teams is played, now you've got the offense putting together a complete game. They do look formidable. Already more wins than they had last year. And they're on top of the NFC North, but only by a smidge, because Kirk Cousins is flinging the football all over the place. And so Cousins, also in our Monday MVP poll, I mean, another game in which he has 4 touchdowns. And this was really a quick start by the Detroit Lions at Ford Field. They definitely wanted to get out there and kind of erase the bad taste of their Packers experience on Monday Night Football. And so they were tied at 21 at the half, but Minnesota answered every single Detroit challenge, which was really impressive. Dalvin Cook is now established as a force. And because of that, In fact, he and Stephon Diggs both had 142 yards. Minnesota's over 500 yards total. Because of the way that Dalvin Cook has turned into this formidable runner, now Minnesota's got a little more room to chuck and duck, and Cousins has stepped up. So four touchdowns for him, a season high, 337 yards. But if you're looking for entertainment, these two teams were a combined 9 for 9 in the red zone. I mean, that jumped off the page at me. 9 for 9. They got in the red zone, and they took care of business. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. So who is your early candidate for Coach of the Year? Who's your Monday MVP? Got all kinds of goodies for you on social media. I know that producer Chris did use our show Twitter and not only post the video from inside the Packers locker room, but also some photos and videos from what was a slogfest in the nation's capital with the San Francisco 49ers and the Redskins tied at halftime at 0. I feel like that's such an awkward way to say it. They were tied at 0. They were nil-nil at half, and really only 3 field goals. But the defense for the Niners was so good. And now in 3 games, 3 total games, they've allowed 10 points. And this stat also blows me away. In back-to-back games, they haven't even given up a combined 100 passing yards. Nerd alert. I'm all about it this morning. 855-212-4227. It's our toll-free line brought to you by Geico. With a quick way you can save money, switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. Monty is listening in Dallas. Welcome to After Hours. Monty.
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Well, I just wanted to say that the Dallas Cowboys really showed their true colors last night.
So you think last night was the true Cowboys?
Yes, I sure do. And I'll tell you this. I believe with all my heart that Jason Garrett should be the dark horse because he keeps those Cowboys. And I'm telling you what, I think we're going to go undefeated for the rest of the season.
Well,
I really believe that.
I mean, that predictions are just that. They're just guesses. But why do you think that Jason Garrett deserves to be a dark horse?
The reason I think that is because he is so consistent. I mean, he's very consistent, and he all those players that respect him, and they came up, you know, they had their backs against the wall last night, and they put down a good team. I mean, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles is not an easy rollover team at all, but they killed them last night.
Well, I thought it was really impressive they came out as well as they did. I mean, they needed to have a big first half because they've put themselves in the hole or not managed to get any momentum in the first half the last 3 weeks. So that, I think, was a major reason why they had stumbled. So I would agree with you that they came out and right away were aggressive. They were the aggressor, which was huge.
Well, you know, it was last night we got to see the Cowboys firing pretty much on all cylinders. Now, not everybody was 100%. But, you know, you have Dak Prescott, and when he rolls back, look at what he's got. He's got Amari Cooper. He's got, you know, Randall Cobb. He's got Michael Gallup. He's got Jason Witten. He's got Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, he's got so many choices, and everybody was doing a great job last night, everybody.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty complete performance, to be sure, and it's a division game, so you got to go out with, you know, with everything you got because those types of games, there's no love lost, obviously, and it doesn't really matter what you've done before or after. So it was a huge statement for them. Thanks, Monty. Have a great day.
You as well. Thank you, Amy.
855-212-4227. Looking at our Facebook page, some of you weighing in for your early Coach of the Year candidates. Mark on Facebook says the front runner is Frank Reich. The dark horse is Sean McDermott. Matthew says, if you don't say Sean Payton, throw the whole league away. I mean, that seems a bit extreme, but what do I know? David says, Frank Reich is my front runner. John Harbaugh is my dark horse. John Harbaugh, you say. There was a cool moment, and this was a back and forth game, kind of, for the Ravens in Seattle. It was really important for Earl Thomas to get his victory against his former team, loves his teammates, but obviously holds a grudge against the Seahawks organization. And the Ravens, huge defensively. So I feel like they kind of picked up that mantle for Earl Thomas. But Marcus Peters has a pick six. Marlon Humphrey has a fumble return for a touchdown. But the moment that stands out to me is Lamar Jackson convincing his head coach and John Harbaugh to go for it on fourth down late in the third quarter. So Lamar didn't like how the offense had been playing to that point. He was tired of seeing Justin Tucker trot out there on fourth down. And so he decided he was going to convince Harbaugh that they should go for it.
When I walked back, I was mad. He was like, "What you wanted to go for?" I'm like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Yeah, I want to go for it." And then he was like, "All right, we're going to go for it." He called a timeout. And I'm like, "We finna get this first down."
It was a fourth down TD run for Lamar Jackson. Another 100-plus yards for the second-year quarterback for Baltimore. So maybe John Harbaugh deserves a vote or two for Dark Horse Coach of the Year. We don't really vote for dark horses, but you also don't do it like this. I think Freddie Kitchens is going to be a dark horse in the second half. No. You go with the evidence based on what you've got. Pam says dark horse Sean McDermott. Yeah, the Buffalo Bills are making steady progress. Josh Allen was efficient, to be sure. I felt like limited the mistakes in their game against Miami yesterday, though Ryan Fitzmagic, he had the Miami Dolphins in the lead to start the second half. So a little bit of adversity there for Buffalo. You want adversity? You've definitely got it with Chicago and the offense. In the return of Mitch Trubisky, disjointed, ineffective. Don't let the 15 points in the fourth quarter fool you, because they got blown out by the New Orleans Saints in Chicago. If not for the 102-yard kickoff return for Cordarrelle Patterson, they wouldn't have had any touchdowns before the fourth quarter. So it's tough sledding right now for the Mitch Trubisky-led Bears offense. But that, on the flip side, is yet another credit to Sean Payton. And so, for sure, the job he's done puts him in that category for Coach of the Year at this point. Let's see. John on Facebook, Riverboat Ron, for the job he's done without Cam Newton. Carl says, Sean McDermott, Frank Reich, and due to all they lost in the offseason, John Harbaugh. And then on Twitter, Dale says, Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan. Yeah, he's got his Niners out to a 6-0 start. I mean, can I get a Bill Belichick, anyone? The Patriots will play on Monday Night Football. We'll talk to you after that. Thanks for joining us. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.